everyone. Welcome to America Trends. Thank you for being with us for this hour. I'm Amy Fuller. Cleanup and mourning in Alabama after those great, great tornadoes that hit in and around Alabama Sunday. Officials have identified 23 people killed, the youngest 6, the oldest 89, and one extended family lost 10 members. A lot of speculation on why in this sort of day and age so many died when there was some good warning ahead of time, according to meteorologists. As the New York Times reports, in forecasting, double-digit lead time is considered an extraordinary scientific feat. They had 12 minutes. But in a place with widespread poverty and few places to hide, the urgent forecast could not save everyone who did not have time to find safe shelter. Others simply disregarded the warning. People are still assessing damage, as you see, just crushing pictures. The Lee County coroner, this is a bit of a sunny news here, says two large corporations have stepped up and they plan to pay for the funerals of all 23 victims of the tornado there in Alabama. There is outcry from border agents saying they are just pushed to the max with illegals coming over the southern border, Southwest specifically. The number of migrant families crossing is again breaking records and straining facilities. They call it a crush that's overwhelming them. More than 76,000 migrants crossed the U.S.-Mexico border last month. That's 76,000 last month, double the number from the same time last year. Most were families, 70 groups of more than 100 people in the past few months, and they cross illegally in extremely rural locations with few agents and staff. The system, they say, is well beyond capacity and remains at the breaking point, said U.S. Customs and Border Protection Commissioner Kevin McAlinon. He says those apprehended used to be single men from Mexico, but now they are mostly families from Central America. Since October, here's another big number for you. Since October, more than 130,000 families have been apprehended between ports of entry. 130,000 families since October. And tens of thousands of children illegally cross the border alone. We'll be hearing more about this in coming days. President Trump has signed an executive order to end another crisis, and this is suicide among our service members and veterans. Each day, 20 on average kill themselves. The Trump administration now developing a roadmap to, quote, cultivate engagement with every veteran, replacing a passive system where too many are ignored. And look at this from the White House. The suicide rate among veterans was 1.5 times higher than other adults in the last year where we had these statistics come, which was 2016. President Trump said to every veteran, I want you to know you have an entire nation behind you. You will never be forgotten, he spoke.
Our mission is to mobilize every level of American society to save the lives of our great veterans and support our heroes in need. We've worked very hard on Choice for the Veterans and so many other programs, and done a really great job in so many ways. Veteran suicide is something that's been an incredible thing to watch, hard to believe. It's tragic. Today, we can help end this crisis. I'd like to thank Secretary Wilkie for being here today with us. He's done a fantastic job as Secretary. He's making tremendous progress at the VA. We are also profoundly grateful to be joined by many of our nation's leading veteran service organizations, the best, and all of the state and local veteran leaders. And I want to thank everybody very much for being here. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much. I know how hard you've been working on this. Veteran suicide is a tragedy of staggering proportions. Hard to believe. An average of 20 veterans and service members take their lives every single day. Who would believe that's possible? There are more than 6,000 veteran suicides per year. The suicide rate among veterans is 1.5 times greater than that for non-veteran adults, and the suicide rate for post-9/11 soldiers has increased significantly over the last.
I'm a sucker for you.
Hey, every day we wake up and wonder, do we have what it takes? And you know what? There are certain areas in our life where we really can take control. And luckily for us here on America Trends, we have our friend of the show, Dr. Arlen Diamond of Diamond Associates, who can walk us through ways to advance our career. Now, Dr. Arlen is an internationally recognized leadership management professional development company, very in demand. And I love this topic tonight we're going to talk about. It's the top traits of people who advance in their careers. So you really can just sort of make a roadmap and try to do better at each little component of it, it looks like. And Dr. Diamond, welcome back.
Thank you. We have a kind of bad connection because we're in having a storm here. And it's interfering somewhat with reception. No. So I apologize if we fade in and out a little bit.
You're looking good so far, but I hope your cats are around. That way, if we just have a picture, we can just sort of gaze at the cats and, you know, maybe throw up some cat memes and enjoy ourselves. But the top, number one is I'm sure you have to do what you love. But the number one thing that you, there you go, high five everybody, it's a bromance. Enjoy a challenge. Too many people, when faced with a time-consuming project, they try to shirk their responsibilities or delegate. And I guess, as you always tell us, we really need to love what we do.
We have to need to love what we do because that's what gets us motivated. But even more importantly than that, we have to be able to communicate what we're doing. And people, there are lots of people who are very quiet and very shy, who are doing a job, but they stay hidden. So, part of getting ahead is being able to promote yourself. And that may sound very callous. Unfortunately, it's all too true. We're working in companies where there are dozens of people around us. Unless we work to be noticed in a positive manner, we're not noticed. So one of the things that I think are really important. The other thing that I think is really super important is a willingness to work harder, a willingness to do new things.
Dr.
A willingness.
Diamond, can I interrupt? Because I just have to ask, because this is really a tricky one for people, especially people, I mean, when you, you know, we hear, let someone else blow, toot your horn about you, and then the news will go twice as far. So how do we sort of say, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing well, without looking like we're just all about self-promotion?
I think it's difficult. Finding a balance between something like an arrogant show-off, which I always worry about because I am an arrogant show-off.
You are one of the sweetest people I know, so you're just being funny now. I love it.
You know, and letting people know what you're doing. I think it's harder for women. I think that, and this is a generalization, and please, feminist friends, shoot me. But I think we women are generally raised to be a little bit more humble, a little less forthcoming in terms of what we do. And it comes more naturally to men because it hasn't been stifled as much in them. But I think that one of the things that women have to learn is to speak up and to be able to say, can do that, or let me show you how I did this, right? In a way that's not saying, oh, look at me, aren't I wonderful, but a way that's communicating, I have some ideas, I can share some strategies with you that work. So in a way that is basically being helped as opposed to braggadocio.
Well, I really like that, and I advise or just encourage companies and employees at every level to contact Dr. Diamond for more on how to really do this in a great, successful way. You also say to see failures as opportunities, and you know, if there's anything constant, it's change and a little bit of failure, and we really just do have to get back up from it, I guess.
I think, you know, if you think about what we do in big projects, we post-mortem after the project. What went well, what didn't go well, how to do better next time. Well, if we apply the same thing to our own successes and failures, you know, kind of before we move on to the next thing, what didn't work? What did I say that I wish I hadn't said? How do I do it better next time? Then we look at failure as a learning opportunity. And it doesn't mean we're not going to be embarrassed and awkward. We will. I mean, obviously, nobody wants to, you know, have egg on their face. But taking it as a learning opportunity is important. One of the companies that I consulted to had on their mouse pad, it's okay to make a mistake as long as it doesn't get to the customer. And I love that.
Oh, thing. I do love that. That's
you
good.
Know, if you're not willing to make mistakes, you're not willing to try new things.
You know, you're right. There's a level of risk that you should take, or you're just not really going to get anywhere. You also say possess confidence. If you don't, you know, we hear the adage, if you don't believe in yourself, who will? But if you're going around nervous and like you don't believe in yourself, people are going to look at you like, yeah, what are you doing here?
I think that's true. I think that we send out perceptions, whether we like it or not, how we dress, what we're wearing, how we stand, how we sit, how we articulate. People will create impressions based on that. And I'm a woman in particular, I recently did a workshop for women wanting to go on corporate boards. And this brilliant woman was one of the people in this workshop. And she spoke in this very humble, submissive, shoulders hunched, soft voice manner of speaking. And you lost her meaning, you lost her words because you were worrying about her from her style.
Sure.
So, you know, part of it is style. People that look good, and I'm not talking about prettiness when I say it, but people that, you know, stand tall and speak confidently are going to be believed more often, and people are going to turn to them more often to give them more creative tasks.
Also, are optimistic. You want to be fun. You know, no one wants to hire a downer or work with a downer. So optimism can go a long way, and that's something that you can't really teach. You're not going to learn it in college. You just have to be, yeah?
Yeah, I think, right. I think it's important not to constantly look for fault. You know, for the good things. I had lunch today with a man who's on the platform committee, one of our state political parties. And one of the things we're talking about was that the platform for this party is mostly negative. It's mostly about what we're not about, what we resent, what we don't like. And I said, that's not inspirational. What inspires people is to know what you're for. What drives you? What motivates you? And the same thing is true, obviously, in our relationships with other people and in the workplace. We need to be, especially the higher up we travel, you know, the pecking order, we need to be inspirational and need to want to do what they need to do. And you can't do that if you're being negative and being a down all the time.
No. And on that topic, I love this topic, Doc. We're going to have you back soon because you also have a couple more are open to feedback. Are flexible, knows sort of go along with that. So Dr. Diamond of DiamondAssociates.net, we're going to have you back soon. Thank you so much for your expertise, always. I'm a sucker for you. Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. Glad you're with us. You know, from politics to personal health, the air we breathe is always in the news, especially if you live in one of those smoggy cities, right? But most of us take it for granted, never thinking about the well-being of our lungs, how we take care of ourselves, unless you're perhaps asthmatic. It's really neat. We've got a very distinguished doctor with us tonight, Kevin Glenn, a pulmonologist. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good. Okay. He wrote this great book called Gasping for Air, How Breathing is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. And you know, it's unnoticed. There are so many toxins in the air that are just in our household that if you think about it for too long, it gets a little scary. So Dr. Glenn, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So you want to tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll get to why you just so felt the need to write this book to let us know what's going on.
Yeah, sure. I'm retired now, but I spent my career as a pulmonary physician, specializing in respiratory diseases, and was part of the Scripps Mercy system here.
In Southern California?
Right, in San Diego, right. And was the medical director of respiratory care for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I got into the field because I had asthma as a child. Mm. And so I remembered what it was like to have to go to the emergency room for a shot of adrenaline and go to the doctor and miss school. And so when I eventually went to medical school, I didn't even think about it, but looking back on it, I was kind of already programmed to go into breathing disorders because that was what I knew and that was the area in which I could relate to patients.
Isn't that something? So again, gasping for air, it's pretty cool. As you said, it sort of matches the dress. I don't know if how that was planned or it was just a God thing.
Nope.
But there are daily toxins that impact our breathing. And again, we don't think about them too much. So what are some of the most imminent and perhaps unnoticed dangers that we should be paying attention to?
Well, tobacco is not unnoticed.
Yeah.
You know, if I could do one thing that would benefit my patients forever, it would be to get them off tobacco, because it was responsible for the majority of the trouble that I used to see when I was caring for patients. Above and beyond that, there are a lot of dust and fumes and toxins and irritants in the environment. And then many of us come into life with vulnerabilities. We have asthma, there are kids with cystic fibrosis, and there's nature and nurture.
Yeah, okay, that's true in everything.
It
must be interesting from your vantage point, too.
Well, it is for me, because one of the reasons I wrote the book is that respiratory diseases are kind of the stepchild among the important, let's call them lethal diseases. The public knows a lot about heart disease because people die suddenly from it, and it's scary. Cancer. But the third largest cause of trouble is chronic respiratory diseases, and they're kind of the Rodney Dangerfield of the important diseases.
And don't get no respects, that's what you're saying.
And don't get as much money for research, and don't get as much press. And yet, 300,000 people a year in the United States die from some form of respiratory problem.
But as you talk about breathing, too, that all works into when you talk about cancer. The fumes and the things we breathe, even our household things that, gosh, there's so many to think of, you can't even, whether it's deodorant, shampoo, candles, cleansers, all that goes into your breathing and affects everything. So it sort of all works together. You've had a big job on your hands trying to educate people.
Yes, yeah, and I hope that doing things like writing books and appearing on a program like this with you are helpful in that. I call that indoor air pollution.
Yeah,
I have
for
a chapter in the book on outdoor air pollution, but this afternoon we're talking more about indoor air pollution, the things in the kitchen, in the garage, even in the bedroom.
So, yeah, sure. Talking to Dr. Kevin Glenn, that's kevinglenn.com, the author of Gasping for Air. And I think it's really cool that even though you're retired, you want to keep using sort of your life's work to educate us and help people. So besides, I bet it's so frustrating for a doctor to have people come in and say, you know, I want to get healthier, or I'm trying to get over this disease, but you know what, I smoke. So there's that. What other things? Okay, so the outdoor pollution, are there any tips you can give us to just try to do better, or just live in the country for heaven's sake?
Well, yeah, the things that we're exposed to outdoors, a lot of them are outside of our control. We can't control it if there's a coal mine down the block from us. The things that we can control inside are mostly dealt with by ventilation. So, and good sense. If you know that something is irritating, then you've got to take precautions. So as an example, oven cleaner is all phosphates. Those are very irritating to your lungs.
Okay, so wait a minute. We all hear about cleansers and trying to get green cleansers and things that are, but oven cleaner is a big culprit?
Got to be careful around it. So my advice to anybody who's going to clean their oven, make sure that you open the doors and windows and that there's good circulation, because you don't want to get those fumes into your lungs. With the same token, that the cleaners that are used on carpets, and those things can be irritating too. So if you are diligent about creating ventilation, you usually won't have any trouble. Unless you're
right?
Underlying asthmatic or have some kind of chronic lung disease already.
So far, there's so much. Look at that. And this is stuff that can come in. You've got pet dander, germs, pollen, environmental cleaning, bacteria. And tobacco smoke. So some of these we do to ourselves, like nature versus nurture, like you say. But even when you talk about like cleaning, I mean, if you have a dog, they absorb things through their paws. And people who work in rescue like I do are always trying to advise people, you know, don't use these harsh cleaners. The dogs will absorb them and the dogs will get sick ultimately. So there are things like that. But your book also has so many good, and you can just grab one of these if you want, because you talk about vaping versus smoking. Carbon monoxide poisoning in the house, insect and mouse droppings. I mean, it's like a hoarder's episode. You see these and they really are, you know, hazardous materials, how safe are water-based paints, ragweed allergies of the summer. Oh, and then fireplaces and wood stoves. Like, what one of these jumps out at you that you want to tell people, hey, you know, just a little, sort of pay attention?
Well, you mentioned fireplaces and wood stoves. There you have to be careful. I cared for an unfortunate man who died. It was a chilly, rainy night in San Diego, and the man tried to cook his dinner on a walk inside his apartment with the door shut, and he passed out. And his wife and daughter passed out. They were all brought to the emergency room, and they had carbon monoxide poisoning. And the wife and the daughter got better, but the other gentleman died. And that was really sad. So these things can happen, and forewarned is forearmed, you know.
I think so. And Dr. Glenn, you know, no matter what we're doing in life, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the day, but every second you are taking a breath. And so I really appreciate you writing this book. It's comprehensive, easily understood, and very readable. It's getting great reviews. And so Gasping for Air, and it's Dr. Kevin Glenn. And I know you've got a novel in the works, so will you come on back and tell us about that when the time comes?
When it gets published.
Sounds good. We'll be rooting for you, Dr. Glenn.
Anyhow, if anybody who wants any more information, much of this is on my website, kevingreen.com.
So. Sounds great. Thanks so much. If you haven't heard, there is a major, major crisis at our southern border. Some people say it's fake, but I'll tell you what's happening right now. Customs, Border Patrol are coming out saying, we can barely handle this. We are stretched to the max. And the numbers, I really don't think people understand the numbers that are coming in. But just one quick one for you. More than 76,000 migrants crossed the U.S.-Mexico border just last month, double the number from the same period last year. Our friend of the show, Tom Del Beccaro, author of The Divided Era and purveyor of political vent. There's the book. I love that book. You want to have that on your bookshelf and maybe just facing out, because it's a good-looking cover, Tom.
How are you? Thanks so much.
I'm really good. Let me brag on you, though. Besides the book, you run politicalvanguard.com, and you're a contributor for Fox Business and Forbes.com. Pretty swanky. So, and also for America Trends. So what could be better? Tom, there's so much to talk about. Ocasio-Cortez, will she go to jail for some finance, whatever, that she moved around? But this border crisis, because you used to be the head of the Republican Party in California. So this is sort of your wheelhouse, sort of the ground zero, one of the states for the immigration issue. So just wanted to see your thoughts on it. And will anybody pay attention, for heaven's sake?
Well, it is real. It is double the number. And until the Republicans start putting video at the border, so that people can see this as it's happening. Somebody should actually just put up a website where they do nothing but these videos.
You're so right.
And when people see pictures, it makes a difference. You said a very interesting thing the other day, or just a minute ago. You said, understand the numbers. People don't, yes, we get numbers. My mortgage is X. My rent is X. My car payment is Y. But pictures are needed. The reason why Planned Parenthood has a visibly lower profile right now is because of the pictures that Project Veritas did. And so until Republicans get wise about that and do that, this is going to go on and on.
That's some great advice for the administration, Tom. I mean, really great advice. Because people, I mean, even the people who are in the states that are right there, Texas, California, and the other ones right there at the southern border, of course, they really think everyone's being hyperbolic. But the fact of the matter is, there are so many we let in for asylum, and because they've done the right way anyway, we're letting people in. We're not racist. We're not anti-immigrant. But there were also 70 groups of more than 100 people in the past few months that cross illegally in extremely rural locations with few agents and staff. Besides the caravans that have been coming here since late last year with scabies, AIDS, hep, mumps, there's a whole new cache of people that have arrived near Texas, in Texas, and about 200 of them have the mumps, these old diseases. And so you cannot underestimate the critical pressure it puts on our people, our facilities, our bottom line, our medical. We have things we have to do with our own population, veterans, to say the least. And so you're so right. You need to see it. But people also need to pay attention to the numbers and realize we're already letting a heck of a lot of people in.
Yeah, all true. Each time Trump has spoken about this at State of the Union and more recently at CPAC, it starts to bring it home. And also people need to realize that these people don't come up here by accident. There is a marketing effort down in the countries of Guatemala and El Salvador, Honduras.
Yeah, all of it.
And they're sold a bill of goods, lies, mm-hmm. but they're sold saying, go to America and these problems will go away, or you'll get this, you'll get that. And that's why there's so many. And they're also told, okay, don't go to this section of the border, go to that section, because they're probing for the weakest area. And again, This is in order to win this, you have to win it with pictures. And even that picture, by the way, looks too romantic. I mean, they have to show these people scurrying and that sort of thing.
But you can't deny that people are saying this is an invasion. And you can't really hold that against them for saying it, because look at the flags they're flying. I saw three flags. None was American.
Yeah. No, it's a very serious problem, and it only takes one terrorist among them to where it becomes an explosive issue. Let's hope we don't get to that point.
No, some of the Democrats have said there are only a few. And you got, everyone on these talking heads on TV, they say it's a pretty good analogy, but they're like, if you're going to eat a bag of Skittles and there are only a few that are poisonous, do you really want to eat that bag of Skittles? I mean, this is ridiculous. We're in the shadow still of 9/11. So
there's
all these
only,
things.
Mm-hmm. It only took a few people to pull off 9/11. It took only two people to pull off San Bernardino. Mm. It took a couple of people to pull off Orlando. So, and given that the Democrats say when it comes to gun control, when President Obama said if even one life can be saved, we should do something. Okay, if one life can be saved in this regard, we should do something.
Tom, what you just said, we should just pause and think about that, because that's all it really did take. There are probably forces at work now, but we've got to fortify the border. And the Democrats can say, oh, they're coming on planes and other ways. But what you just said, we had a huge caravan come up beneath the San Diego-San Ysidro border a few months back. Well, there's a wall there, so that didn't work out so well. I'm sure some people still got in. But what they did was, as you say, they learned and they went to Eagles Pass, Texas, where there are more rural areas to pass through. And our Border Patrol, they said, we are crushed. So.
And there's not even space for them. And we need video of them coming in and being like overwhelmed, like all these people making the mad dash and getting by. That's what they need to do. And the more people see things like that, like what you're seeing in there, I mean, that wall needs to be taller. Mm-hmm. I've never understood why these walls are so short. They can be taller.
That's right there. This is below San Diego, San Ysidro, and then Tijuana. And there were all these back and forth things where they would do. It was almost like photo ops the immigrants were doing, or the migrants and the would-be illegals if they got in. And you said there are forces behind them that say, it's easy, come on in. And so there's all that. And it used to be, Tom, these numbers that are coming out in these press conferences this week from Border Patrol, it used to be that it was mostly Mexican men trying to sneak in. Now they say it's a lot of families from all the Honduras, El Salvador, as you say, Guatemala. And so you've got all these huge, huge units, 70 groups of more than 100 people in just the past few months. And last year, there were only 13 large groups during the previous budget year, only two the year before. So it's happening. They can deny it if they want, but...
This is the power of television. What you see is the power of television. 50 years ago, or even during Reagan's time, without the internet, this wouldn't have happened because you wouldn't be able to see it so easily and therefore copy it. A lot of what happens in, like, Jesse Smollett and all these things, this is based on pictures. So if pictures are amping it up, you need to use pictures to tamp it down.
Mm. And all this this signaling where people want to be, oh, I have such a soft heart. What, poor Jesse. And it was, you know, police say it was a lie. So we're going to come back, maybe chat a little bit about more of this, Tom, but also you have a sort of something you were talking about on social media. Hillary out improves Bernie Sanders' chance of winning nomination, Hillary being out, because you say he has a big infrastructure. We're going to talk about it after this. Tom DeBaccaro is the author of The Divided Era, his latest book. He's a contributor to Forbes and Fox Business, and he's actually got a lot of, he's a lawyer. He's got, he was the past head of the Republican Party in California, so sort of ground zero for the border crisis. We chatted about that. But I have a couple other topics, Tom, I wanted to ask you about. So if you have anything you want to note on the border, too, but I want to talk to you about, you're a lawyer, so we really want your input on this Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, one of our newest, youngest congresswoman who just 2 years ago was bartending in New York, and now she has all the answers. And her answers are, well, I don't have any great ideas, so we're just going to take a bunch of money from the rich and I'm going to do with it what I want as a member of Congress. So there's that, and also Bernie Sanders and his chances and other Democrats who've thrown their hats into the ring. So you tell me where you want to start, my friend.
Well, let's start with Bernie Sanders, because I'm also now a Fox News op-ed contributor. Not just Fox Business.
Wait, so Fox Business and Fox News?
Yes, thank
you very
much.
Someday we're going to call you and you're going to say, we're not available. And we're going to say, Tom?
No, I'm going to come down, actually, and be in studio sooner than later.
Oh, yeah, it's been a few minutes. We'd like to see you again. Sounds good.
So Bernie Sanders, I think, is going to win their nomination. And there's numerous reasons why.
Oh, my goodness.
And the answer is significantly because Bernie has run nationwide before, and he's the only one to have run nationwide before on their side. He already has a network infrastructure around the country. These first-time candidates, it's no easy task to get up and running in all the states. In fact, in 2008, when John McCain won the nomination, he had to skip primaries. So did Mike Huckabee, if you remember, finish second. He had to skip a bunch of primaries. It's really hard. Hmm. Bernie's not going to skip any. So that's a big advantage to him. Beyond that, there'll probably be 20 Democrats who show up to Iowa, maybe more, looking for votes.
It's going to be a zoo.
What that means is you do the math. 100 divided by 20 is only 5% for each. So the winner, I think, will come. Maybe someone will hit 20. But the top three is what matter. Bernie lost Ohio last time around by 4 votes. Iowa, the Iowa caucus. He's going to do fine there again. And remember, he won New Hampshire 4 years ago. So in the first 2 primaries, and all these many people are there, Bernie's going to be in the top 2, if not win them both. Well, if you win both those primaries, you're off to the races. So I'm bullish on him being their nominee because he's been there before. His voters are very committed. Bernie's anti-establishment. The Dem establishment hates him. That means his people like him. Does that sound familiar? So I expect him to finish to be their nominee, and they're not going to like it. And I think it makes it easier for Trump.
Just taking a look back at one of those pictures of Bernie Sanders we saw, that control room has just pulled these great pictures. I don't know if anyone's actually seen him and Larry David in the same room. I haven't. So it's always
Larry Larry David is shorter and thinner, and his face is thinner too. I've seen Larry David.
This is a story for another time, but I was behind him on an escalator in the airport, and I knew him from behind, which proves I watch too much TV. But sorry about the juxtaposition there. Tom, I love that
there you go.
Let's not just bad. Take this in for a minute. I mean, it is. They sound alike.
Not bad.
But my point, the reason I sort of say this, Tom, is because it's sort of amusing and entertaining, but people take Bernie seriously. And so what that means is they're taking socialism seriously.
They do. And he has the most committed voters on the left. I mean, they've been with him before. They thought he was ripped off in 2016.
Well, he was. Let's face it. The Democrats did him in for Hillary.
So they're carrying a chip on their shoulders. That's why he's going to – I think he can win Iowa. People are talking about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's the quintessential prospective candidate. But once Joe gets on the trail and talks every day and starts in with his gaffes and his message goes all over the place, he's a paper tiger. So I expect Bernie to win New Hampshire, and I think he's got a great chance to win Iowa. And then, boy, you're in the catbird seat at that point.
Oh, it is going to be – it's going to be so entertaining. The only problem is there's so much at stake. But yeah. I love that people should really follow you on social media besides going to politicalvanguard.com and Forbes and Fox Business and Fox News. It's a pretty special
Thank
guy.
Thank you very much.
Because as you say, Bernie Sanders is the one. What you said says it all. He's got the national infrastructure, and that's so much. But just going back to Biden for a minute, Democrats, I've been hearing lately, they have this fantasy that Biden will run and have who? Michelle Obama as his running mate.
Yeah, she's not going to run. You know, I remember when America wasn't supposed to be about dynasties. Now, we've had some. The Adams family in the beginning was a big deal.
Oh, for sure.
The Kennedys. Mm. The Bushes.
The Bushes, sure, of course. Then the Clintons, of course. You just... And who knows what might come down the pike with Chelsea. She's talked about not ruling out.
Yes, but this isn't... That's not going to happen. That's not more going to happen than I'm going to pitch for the Yankees on opening day.
And I know you want to.
And I've been warming up.
So all of that. So you've also talked about some of the front runners. You think Kamala Harris would be a front runner. But so just to keep score right now, you're thinking that Bernie will.
Here's my Iowa prediction.
Okay.
Let's talk about being reckless and making this 10 months in advance.
Let's do it.
Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar.
Amy Klobuchar. Not Cory Booker. We don't really care about him right now. Spartacus?
No, Cory doesn't have his own reason to run. Kamala covers all of his issues. She's a much more attractive human being, and I mean in every respect, not... her body language is better, her presentation's better, the way she speaks is better. Cory Booker, when he talks, it's obvious that he's selling you something. Kamala Harris does not look like a slick salesperson. I'm not saying I agree with her views. Look, I debated her and beat her, but she's...
I love Cory. When are we going to get video of that, Tom? I want the video.
Right?
And did she smell like pot? Because she said back then she was doing pot, even though she was prosecuting people.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't think Cory Booker has anything to sell of any great measure. Kamala's going to have more money than him, and that will help with infrastructure in states.
Okay.
So look for her to be the number three finisher in Iowa.
Okay, Tom, I'm so short on time, 15 seconds, but I must ask you, you're a lawyer. This Ocasio-Cortez and her chief of staff. Will she go to jail?
It's doubtful she'll go to jail.
Is it but serious?
But because of the way they transferred the money, one of the penalties is to give the money back. And that's going to be a huge problem. But I don't see her going to jail, which is why, of course, Obama didn't go to jail and neither will Trump.
Okay, to be continued. Thanks, Tom.
Ha ha ha! Han er så dyktig på ham, man. Kaj.
Can I have another kiss? You're so cute. Yes, you are.
It's why the internet was invented, for our U2 America TV audience just saw some of the best trending pet video there is. And our, for our Biz Talk radio audience, we thank you for being with us, too. And want to remind you, you can find us on those websites, the U2 America website. There it is. And also the Biz Talk radio websites. We really are glad to have you. You can click right through. Look, we've got podcasts of all our past things. You can click on there and get those past podcasts. And also click through and find us on social media. We would love to be your friend on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I've got my own little personal account. So you can go there or go to the America Trends TV. It's at America Trends TV. But what we'd really like to do is be friends with you, because it would be super fun, right? We also want to say thanks so much to our guests for coming on and giving us insight into all their great things. We had Dr. Arlen Diamond from DiamondAssociates.net with, you know what, the traits, if you want to get ahead in your career, the traits that it really, really takes that you can focus on. And she's so great about that. She's got so much experience, and we really love having her. Kevin Glenn, Dr. Kevin Glenn, a pulmonologist who has a new book called Gasping for Air, How Breathing is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. And he talked about the toxins that were affecting us. And he's a new guest, and we really liked having him. Tom DelVicaro with the political headlines of the day, including the crisis at the border. So, you know, we are really blessed to have people like this on. We really, really appreciate it. But finally tonight, this is what you have trending. It's the second trailer that's been released for the new Shazam movie, another superheroes thing. It is, you have it trending, and it opens in theaters April 5th. And we wanted to show you your first look as we head on out and say thank you.
David Batson, I choose you as a champion. Say my name so my powers will become yours. Shazam.
Are you for real?
Say it, okay?
Say my name.
Crazy, right?
What are your superpowers?
Superpowers, dude? I don't even know how to pee in this thing.
This is proof of authenticity. Super strength. Electricity manipulation. Hyper speed.
I'd like to purchase some of your finest beer, please.
Sparkle Fingers.
No, it's not. That's not my name.
Chosen One.
Oh, you're like a bad guy, right?
You literally did the opposite of what a superhero is supposed to do.
You're him. You're the hero.
You're welcome for not getting robbed.
I'm Batman.
Get him, Batman!
How old are you?
Basically 15.
Did you see that?
Yeah, you electrocuted a bus and almost killed these people.
And then I...